everyone. Welcome back to the Film Fund Podcast. I'm your host, founder, and executive producer at the Film Fund, Thomas Verity. I'm also an award-winning filmmaker, producer, and film festival judge. I started the Film Fund to give filmmakers an easier, alternative way to get their films funded. Instead of working on a screenplay, crowdfunding campaign, or grant application, you write one sentence pitching your film for a chance to receive up to $10,000 and other prizes to make it. If you are listening to this, it is the last day of the Spring 2022 Narrative and Documentary Funding Contests. And as I say that, I realize this will be posted next month, so it doesn't really mean much. But if you are listening, check out the website at thefilmfund.co for the most up-to-date information, because we host contests regularly. So we post the most up-to-date information on our website and our email newsletter. So be sure to check this out and enter your one-sentence pitch for a chance to receive up to $10,000 to make your film. Today we have Emily Earhart. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Usually I ask the guests if I'm pronouncing their names before we start recording, but I just kind of went for it today. Emily received $3,000 for her documentary short film. She pitched it in one sentence, and our judges chose it as the winner. Emily, thank you so much for being on the show today. Could you give us a brief introduction?
Yeah, of course. So my name is Emily Earhart. You did get it right. And I am a freelance filmmaker. I do a lot of more producing here in the Twin Cities. I'm based out of Minneapolis. And I, in the long run, would love to make documentary style films. So.
Very cool. So have you always been in the Twin Cities?
I've lived numerous places. So I've lived in Colorado when I was 18, 21, kind of did the ski bum thing, took some classes out there. And then I came back to Minnesota to attend the University of Minnesota, where I have a background in wildlife biology. And then I went out to Bozeman, Montana, and took some classes in science and natural history filmmaking at Montana State.
Oh, very cool. Class was that specific. It was on, what was the name of the course? Or the
it was it's a master's program. It's a master's in science and natural history filmmaking.
Very cool. So that's a film program specifically about science and natural history. That's so cool. I always ask, you know, our winners if they did the film school thing. And that just sounds like a really unique program. Could you tell me a little bit more about that? Like, how did you even find that?
Yeah, so there's actually like three similar programs in the world. There actually might be four now. I think it's American University out of DC has one as well. And then Bristol, which is actually like a specifically for the BBC. I'm pretty sure that they farm people out of there. And then New Zealand has a similar program as Montana State. And so I think it's both New Zealand and Montana State that they actually require you to have a background in science. And so it was started, and at the time when it was started, they had some funding from, I believe, Discovery Channel, and it was to try and create content specifically regarding, like, around science. And so the best way to communicate that was with people who actually have a science background but also understood the film industry. And so I was kind of inspired to do that. I was actually, in my undergrad, I worked with a professor at the University of Minnesota, Dave Smith. He's studied tigers since the 70s. And we were just talking about how to conserve tigers and wildlife. And a big part of that is communicating science with the general public. And so that kind of is what inspired me to pursue that path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your winning pitch.
So my winning pitch, I should probably pull it up. I don't even remember the exact.
That's okay. If you want, I leave it up to the winners. Sometimes we don't release the winning sentences until the film is actually out there, or I could just read the pitch. If you know, you want to share it with the community, it's up to you.
Yeah, it's totally fine either way. Do you want to read it and then I want me to tell you about it, or?
Yeah, let's do that. Two Nepalese brothers who dedicated their lives to bring back tigers from the brink of extinction now have to face their scared community as man-eating tigers are on the rise. Dollar sign for DP and audio post. Emily used an actual dollar sign in her pitch, which is totally acceptable because we do have that 200 character limit there. And she used a semicolon to make it one sentence. Always remember, has to be one sentence, people. If you write two sentences and use a period, that is not okay, and you cannot the winner of the Film Fund. So Emily used a semicolon because she's very smart and knows how to write one sentence. Anyway, it's very, very interesting. Obviously, she's bringing her science background into play here. So yeah, tell us a little bit more about the project, how you got interested in that, maybe working with that professor you were mentioning.
Yeah, so the University of Minnesota offered a short course. It was called like Tiger Ecology in the Field in Thailand, actually. And so it was like a 3-week course. And so I went to Thailand with a professor and a small group of people. And during that time, Dave and I just kind of vibed. We're both fairly eccentric, so got along pretty well. And I've spent some time just in like other communities. And so I was like pretty comfortable being in Thailand. And he just said that he liked that I spent a lot of time with the Thai people and getting to know them. And so he took me aside and asked if I was interested in going overseas and working with his colleagues for the summer. And so I received some funding from the University of Minnesota, and I went back to Thailand for the entire summer. And then when I came back to the U, he asked if I wanted to go to Nepal with him for about 6 months. And I got another, a little bit of funding from the U again to lead a research project over there. And when I was there, I got to meet his two wildlife technicians that he's been working with since the Smithsonian originally started the first tiger ecology project in the world, Vishnu and Harkaman Lama. Yeah. And he's the older of the two brothers, and he was Dave's cook, and their grandfather was a wildlife tracker for the King of Nepal back in the day. And so Dave said, hey, instead of cooking for me, why don't you work as a wildlife technician? You are good at tracking animals. So they started working for him in, I believe it was like 1973. Mm-hmm. And so I got to know them really well, and their whole family, their kids are in wildlife today. And if I go to Nepal, I usually stay with one of the sons. And so anyway, I was over there working on this project about man-eating tigers and human-wildlife conflict. Mm-hmm. And then one of my like closest friends and I started a nonprofit where we raise money for tigers and community members. And so basically all the money we get, we just filter right back to Nepal to either the National Trust for Nature Conservation or the Tiger Trust, which is directly dealing with human wildlife conflict and trying to bridge support for tiger conservation, even though human tiger conflict is on the rise.
I say obviously because if you listen to this podcast and you read the website, we love pitches that have to do with conflict. We believe at the Film Fund that conflict is the root of all storytelling, and you need a really good conflict to tell a story, whether that's in documentary storytelling or narrative. And this pitch is just it. There's so much conflict. You have the tigers, you know, I'll say versus, for lack of a better word, the humans, but then you also have, you know, the human society wanting to conserve tigers, even though the pitch says that man-eating tigers on the rise. So it's very, there's just so much to work with here, and I'm so interested in how this project comes out. My next question is where you draw inspiration from your work, but obviously you're very immersed in, is ecology the right term? I don't even know. I'm not familiar with the correct terminology for what you study.
So it'd be, I think probably conservation would be
conservation. Okay.
Encompassing. Yeah. I mean, they're kind of in parallel with one another, but.
Mm-hmm. So you studied science before getting involved in filmmaking, it sounds like.
Yes. So yeah, background wildlife biology. And then the goal was to take some classes at Montana State and then come back and do a PhD at the University of Minnesota. And mm-hmm. that path just didn't play out with funding and just timing. And I actually like started getting more involved with the film world. And as a child, I've always been intrigued by art. And so it kind of just became the path that I ended up taking.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And, you know, you touched on a little bit when you were talking about the professor and when you went overseas. But what really drew you to the film world?
I think I feel like just connecting with people is such an important thing to do. And I think I've always been a fairly social person, and I just think there's a gap between the science world and the world in general. And there's all these papers being published, but it's really hard to go through them and read through results and understand what they actually say. And I think,
yeah, especially what if you're not really in the science world.
Yeah, right. It's a little bit, even when you're in it, it can be a little nuanced. And so to support our world and things that drive me and that I think are important, we really need community support and storytelling. I love storytelling and just getting to know people. And so I wanted to bring those worlds together a little bit.
I love that. You know, it's, you're taking one passion and kind of merging it with another interest of yours, which is filmmaking. And that's always such a great way, I think, to create new things, new stories, you know, combining one thing with another thing. It's just, there are so many possibilities there for storytelling. And we used to call it, I mentioned that, I got to stop repeating myself because in the last episode I talked about this too, but my grad program, which was in entrepreneurship and product development, we talked about a concept called by association, which is where you take two things and combine them to create like a new product idea or service or something like that. So I just love that you're combining your love of conservation with filmmaking and storytelling, and making it more accessible. Because, I mean, yeah, even if you are in the science world, I know those papers can be, my sister was just, she's finishing up her master's degree in environmental science or environmental studies at Penn. Mm-hmm. And she asked me to read her paper to, like, you know, I was an English major, so she wanted me to like help out with some grammar stuff. And I was reading and I was like, man, this is just so, like, it can get so dense sometimes. And, you know, you have the abstract and all these sciencey things, like the average person is not, that by the time it gets filtered to them, it's going to be way different maybe than, or maybe it doesn't even get to them. So I love that you're taking that and making the storytelling, making it more accessible with storytelling. I think that's great.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. And yeah, like you said, it is hard to comb through those papers. And even people from different science backgrounds, I've had chemists and different people read my, I like had a, write a grant for grad school, and they kept correcting a couple of things, but it was just because they were correct. They just didn't really understand something like the biology and conservation terms. Mm-hmm. So it's always interesting, the disconnect between even in, within the sciences themselves. So
yeah. Yeah. And film's so universal and accessible. It's like, I think it's even easier than picking up a book. You know, with a book, you need to kind of your unconscious creates a lot of the gaps that are missing, and it fills in the details. Maybe the author didn't describe it with film. Everything's presented right there in front of you. Which I don't think it's necessary. I'm not to say, you know, novels and books are bad or papers are bad, but it's a lot for the general public. I think watching a movie is a lot easier than picking up a book or reading a paper. So it's definitely, I think, a good way. And, you know, we have Marvel movies and more indie artistic movies, but across the board, I think it's just a great way, a great art form for the general public too, as well, in terms of spreading things that are important. What so with your career, are you doing filmmaking full time, working on this project? And you said you're freelance.
Yeah, I do freelance work around the Twin Cities. So I'm doing a lot of producing for Jaybird Films, who does a lot of drone work.
Okay.
There's been some, so I mean, everybody from, you know, PGA to like F1 is kind of some of the clients. Oh, and wow. Then
PGA, just, like the golf.
Yeah, do some. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, if you look at Jaybird Films, let's give a shout out to Jay.
Yeah.
It's Bird with a Y. You've probably seen some of his videos. Mm-hmm. They're pretty viral right now. So
Cool.
Pretty exciting to. Yeah, to be a part of that. And then I have a work with another director around the Twin Cities, so music videos. And then this is kind of a passion project. It's obviously hard to find funding for especially documentary style films and mm-hmm. wildlife. So I guess part of me is like, you know, doing this and then just creating income so I can do the things that I'm most passionate about mm-hmm. for myself, kind of on my own dime a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. As filmmakers, we all feel that passion projects and the wallet, and how much of my own money am I going to put into this? I always struggle with that with my own projects. It's so ironic. I run a film funding company, but then I need to fight. I can't obviously fund my own project. I can't choose myself as the winner from the film fund. So mm-hmm. I was like, where am I going to get the funding for this? People are like, oh, you have a film funding company. It's like, well, it's not exactly how it works. So yeah, we're always trying to find money for our projects. I definitely feel that. What is the status of your project? I mean, I'm so excited to hear updates about it. And just like, it's not every day we get a pitch that involves man-eating tigers that are actually true stories. So I can't wait to like hear more about it and see what's going on.
Yeah, so the status is... and also man-eating tigers just like is like unique like geographically too, and like not as scary as like it maybe may sound for most people. But I just like don't want to villainize them too much as a species. But so status is we've done like some filming, and we have a lot of wildlife film like footage collected, which is from Sagar Giri, who is Nepal's designated wildlife photographer, videographer. So luckily he's partnered with me to get some of the harder clips of tigers. I don't have unlimited time to be in Nepal. So super awesome that he's been so welcoming. And then the plan is to go over there this winter to hopefully finish that, the film. So that's the goal. So yeah. So I think I kind of have a number of people who are volunteering time to help me do this project, which is really special.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I'm just thinking, like, forgive my total ignorance of conservation and maybe even the science world, but why do we, if these tigers are man-eating, I know you said you don't want to villainize them, at all or a lot or whatever. Why do we want to conserve these tigers if they are man eating? Generally, that sounds like a bad thing. So, like, I'm sure there's an important reason we want to conserve them. But why is that?
Yeah, so it's actually like pretty interesting. So I've spent some time, and one of my like closest friends is doing her PhD, specifically like working on this problem, and people in Nepal generally do support tigers, even the ones who live amongst tigers. So specifically in this region of the world, they're heavily reliant on the ecosystem to provide them with the sustenance that they need. So they use Chitwan National Park and the other wildlife areas to graze cattle and to collect fodder to build fires and such. And so tigers actually keep the deer population down and balance the ecosystem and allows it to thrive so that we can collect the and have like the ecosystem needs that we need as a species to survive like ourselves. And so they're super important for the ecosystem in general to balance it. And so we're like actually very reliant on them for our own survival, whether and like with like rice cultivation and all types of ecosystem services that they provide. So it's quite a complex interconnected situation.
So it's not like you have these tigers out there who are just like eating people like left and right. It's more like why are they called man-eating tigers? I guess because they would eat someone if they were pitted against them.
So in Nepal is like Nepal's about the size of Tennessee, and the bottom third of it is grassland, and so that's where the densest tiger population in the world actually lives. In Nepal. What's happened as like earthquakes and different things happen, like more and more people are pushed to the southern Nepal, and so there's about 30 million people in Nepal, and there's 200 tigers. And so
what were those numbers again?
So still not very many. 30 million people and 200 tigers that exist in this landscape. And so what's happened is as the population density has come around these protected lands, there's more interactions with tigers and with people. And so tigers don't really have anywhere to go, and people are encroaching on their territory. And so because people are using these areas to graze livestock and to collect fodder – often what happens is that people will go out and they'll collect stuff from the forest. And so they'll be bent over and a tiger will think that they're a deer. And wow. So they'll come out and they'll kill them. And it's oftentimes it'll happen once and they won't kill another person. Mm-hmm. But there are times that there have been habitual man eaters. Mm-hmm. And sometimes like when tigers get old or injured, they'll come out of the forest and they'll start killing livestock. And when you're trying to protect your livestock, then sometimes you get killed yourself.
Gotcha.
And so, yeah, so it's not that it is happening. And so like since like in the last, I think 20 years it is now, I'd have to look at the dates again, but mm-hmm. there's been more and more man eating. I think it's got up tenfold in the last 20 years.
Wow.
As we've brought tigers back and there's more of the population from Nepal sure. moving south. So it's becoming a bigger issue.
So it's really, I mean, it sounds like, I'll just use man as a general term for human society. It sounds like man is kind of encroaching on their natural land and there's not enough room or resources for them as there once was.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, what was the stat? It's like in the last 100 years, we've seen the population of tigers go from 100,000 to about 3,500.
Wow.
Oh my tigers God. And
so are they an endangered
their
species?
Natural habitat. Yep, they are endangered. And so, and then within that same, in that same 100 years, their land, they used to roam, like, so their land, the protected areas have dwindled to about 7% of their historic range. Mm-hmm. And within that 7%, I think only about 1% has a viable tiger population.
Wow. So now I understand yeah. why we're looking to conserve them, because they are necessary for the ecosystem and they've just, their population has been dwindling as we encroach upon their land. That makes a lot more sense. I feel a lot less dumb. I knew nothing about conservation or anything. I'm like, how am I going to talk about this? So thank you for explaining that.
Yeah,
and making it.
I probably could have led with that.
No, it's okay. Because I see the pitch and it's so interesting. It's like man-eating tigers, let's save them. And just it doesn't add up at first, but now once we get into it, it makes a lot of sense. And I think it creates more conflicts too, because first you hear that and it's like, oh, man versus tiger, which is the very base conflict. But like now you have populations and population growth versus conservation. And I'm sure all of that's involved in your film, whether you explicitly mm-hmm. say it or not. It's just so interesting. There was a reason we were drawn to the pitch. And the more I learn about it in the past 20 minutes, the more interested I am in it. The closest I get to tigers is they have a tiger dog at the bowling alley that I go to in Philly. So I haven't seen a tiger in quite some time, aside from like maybe the zoo. I don't even know. But that's awesome. So you said you're looking to wrap up the project sometime in the fall.
Yeah. So I'm planning, I believe I'll actually be traveling to Nepal, between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And so yeah, my close friend there who will be doing her PhD and research, and she's pretty much fluent in Nepali. My Nepalese is not that great. And so that's super convenient. And then I have a small crew that will probably be heading over there me.
What are you guys shooting on camera-wise?
Yeah. You know, originally I shot some of the footage. I do have like a small trailer with a C300.
Okay.
And so I'm not sure if that's what we'll continue to shoot on. We'll probably look at maybe something different. I know like one of my friends has a Blackmagic, and then kind of depends on what troops I'm going to wrangle to come
with.
So
for sure. Oh, that's awesome. Is that trailer available to be shared or has it not been released yet?
Yeah, you can. It's a little, yeah, you can look at it. It's, I think if you YouTube The Last Tiger, you will find it.
Okay. Is that the name of the project? The Last Tiger?
Working name, at
working
least.
Name.
Yeah.
Awesome. I like it. I like it a lot. Very cool. And then will you be submitting to film festivals or is there different documentary distribution paths you have in mind?
I would ideally like to submit to film festivals. I do have a friend who has produced a number of projects with National Geographic. Okay. And so maybe we'll have some, I've been networking a lot, so maybe we'll have some more opportunities there. But honestly, it's kind of a passion project. So whatever route it takes, I'm just happy to be able to put this and create something that's like so true to my heart. So
very cool. Have you done the film festival experience before?
I haven't. So that's going to be a new run for me.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Yeah. I mean, I've never done the festival route for a passion project for myself with a documentary. So I know that's probably, you just have a completely different audience a lot of the time. And like different, you know, people in that world. And I know distribution can be a lot different. You know, there's more of an academic interest sometimes as well. So that's going to be super cool. Fingers crossed, you know, if you get into some festivals, definitely let us know, keep us posted. We'd love to do blog posts about them and, you know, social media and all that jazz. And that's so awesome. What advice would you give to our community of filmmakers who may be just starting out, or maybe they're, I don't know, anybody? We have people in our community who range from very experienced to never picked up a camera before. So any advice that you would want to pass along from your experiences?
I think that it is definitely intimidating industry to get into. For me, networking has been everything. Mm-hmm. And so I always say, be bold. I've emailed the president of Moxie Pictures, which is like a huge commercial producer out in New York City. I've gotten a response.
Oh, that's awesome.
I've reached out to people from, National Geographic, all my filmmakers that I like, all the people around in the Twin Cities. So I say, be bold, network, say yes to as many opportunities that you can, because even though they sometimes seem like they don't make sense, but a lot of times things come full circle. Uh-huh. And so just stay positive. Yeah.
I totally agree with that. Definitely be bold. I started the Film Fund back in college, a little over, we're going to give away my age now, I guess, assuming I went to college at normal age, but not normal, but traditional. I started it over like 5 years, maybe 5.5 years ago, like my senior year. And I was literally DMing writers from blogs, like No Film School on Twitter, or tweeting at them because they listed their writers on their masthead. And I said, hey, created. And the website at that point, if you saw it, if you've been with us since the beginning, following along, it was very bad. It was just like a one page website with a form on it. I was DMing this link to people saying like, hey, I'm working on this new film funding platform, check it out. And I was sending that link to everyone I could possibly think of who might be someone in film. And I got a response, and No Film School ended up posting us. And there we go. We got some eyes on the website, and it just grew from there. So definitely bold. Love that advice. I've lived that as well. You have to put yourself out there. It's just so important. You have to kind of throw away the self-consciousness and the worrying about like, oh, well, what if I'm being too forward? You have to just try, and just be, you know, friendly and try to be nice. And just, everyone's a person at the end of the day. You know, you start out being very intimidated and reluctant, and then once you start networking and putting yourself out there, it kind of just becomes second nature. It's like, hey, I'm so-and-so, I do this. You don't necessarily want to say, how can you help me? Like, exactly to the point, but you're always looking mm-hmm. how you can help each other. And that's where awesome relationships come from a lot of the time. So that's great advice. I love that. How did you find the Film Fund, Emily?
I have spent endless amounts of time just finding sources of funding and just trying to, like I said, like networking, just like reaching out to people. And honestly, I think just like, I think it was through No Film School. Mm-hmm. I just have been tracking down, and I think like you were saying, just like not be intimidated by the process. And I think for the longest time, I was like, it's not perfect. It's not good enough. I need to do all these things. Yeah. Right. Like I just wanted it to be so perfect. Mm-hmm. And then I think eventually I got to the point where I'm like, I just want to do this. Like this has to happen. Mm-hmm. If it's imperfect, it's better than nothing at all. And if people say no, I'm going to be in the same spot. So I finally just sat down this winter and put my trailer out on YouTube. It's not what I wish it was, but it's something, mm-hmm. and started contacting people. So yeah, that's kind of what happened.
One thing I learned too, in terms of putting work out, no one else knows the vision that you have in your head of something. Like, you may have that perfect vision of what you think it should be. No one else knows that. So whatever you put out, like an example that I can talk about for my short film that's coming out, I had this very specific character in mind, and I wanted this specific actor to play him, and I wrote it for this actor. He had some personal things going on. He was unavailable, and so I had to cast someone else in the role, and it just didn't come out how I wanted it. But as I talked to people, they're like, oh, I really loved that character, and it was so different from what I had imagined. And then I realized, like, no one knew that previous version I had in my head but me. So mm-hmm. this idealistic version of something you may have in your head that's perfection, it really is only perfection to you. When you put something out there, it's something concrete, it exists, and it's there, and people will see it, and it may not be exactly what you had in mind, but it's still something that can be incredible. Whether it's a little bit different from what you had in your head is kind of a moot point once it's out there. And I think that's so cool too. Like, that's something about film that's also really cool. Like, you're sharing something concrete. There's not as much room for imagination in terms of an art form. I totally just lost my train of thought. I had something lined up I was going to ask you, and I can't remember what it is now after I went on that tangent. But, and you said you could find the trailer by searching The Last Tiger?
Yeah, on YouTube. It should be there.
Awesome. We'll share it. We'll dig up that link, and we will share it in the show notes when we release this probably next month. It is currently May, so this episode will likely be released sometime in June. That's so cool. Speaking about the Film Fund and just shamelessly plucking it, what are some of your favorite things about the Film Fund?
I think the biggest thing is it just gives people opportunity that maybe haven't had a major role. Like, I think it's super hard to find funding, especially if they're like, they want you to have produced or directed the same type of content on a certain level. Mm-hmm. And so even though I have experience working in a professional way, I don't have never produced or directed a wildlife doc. So I think it was really cool that it actually provides opportunity, especially in this field where I've found that if you're not fluent, it is a really hard industry as a freelancer to become, especially a documentary filmmaker. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I think that's so important. You're giving a leg up for all of us to pursue our dreams.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And it means so much, to have you on the show and to have people emailing in and submitting. It's just, it's overwhelming. Sometimes we get some emails, even for people who don't win the contest, they're just like, oh, like, thank you so much for running this. It's really great to see there are opportunities out there, because we want to make it more accessible. We want to make it easier to enter. Screenwriting contests and grants, they're great. It's awesome that they're able to award funding to people as well, but they are time consuming a lot of the time. And they do, like you said, they want to see previous experience. Someone's not just going to give thousands of dollars to someone who's never produced a wildlife doc before. Well, we are, because we know you need to start somewhere. And we're interested in the story. We're interested in the pitch itself, not necessarily your credentials. Because everyone needs to start somewhere. And at the end of the day, if you put resources into a project and you truly care about it, and there's a good story there, we believe that it's going to come out and be successful. So definitely mm-hmm. happy to help out. And I just love that part of the process too. And I love actually meeting the filmmakers. So far that's mostly been remotely, that we have had a winner or two in Philadelphia who I've been able to meet. Most of the connection has been on this podcast, which is super cool. We're able to do that, but maybe one day we'll do like a film festival or a screening with all the winners of the Film Fund to get all the people together. That would just be so much fun.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. I gotta
figure that out, because I've been talking about that for a while. What's next for you in the next year or so? Wrapping up the film in the fall, submitting it, and then what?
That's a great question. I guess I think like in a bigger sense, one of the things that I would love to do is kind of in the same breath as what I'm doing for this project, I'd love to create a series that followed wildlife biologists and their career. So it's kind of a biographical documentary, but it also tells the history of the animals that they study alongside that. And so that's kind of what I want to capture with this mm-hmm. film, with the brothers. And so I just love the story. I love the story of people and what makes what makes people tick and like what their passions are. And I think that everyone's passionate about something. And so regardless of you're not interested in the subject, at least you can connect with a person and their passion. So I love to just tell the stories of passions about like the subjects through people's passions, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Would that be strictly wildlife focused, or would that be any kind of passion?
I would like to do something with wildlife, but I think I would be interested in like capturing other lenses too. I think that
was that pun intended? I've seen it done in through the lens.
It was not intended, but yeah. So I think like, I don't know if you've seen Chef's Table on Netflix, mm-hmm. but I think they do kind of a similar thing with that. And so you can do sports or anything. I just love telling people stories. So I think that would be something that I would like to do in the future.
Very cool. And this question is totally random, but it just popped in my head. Have you seen Tiger King on Netflix?
I have. Everyone. It's really ridiculous, obviously, and I feel like I have to like digest that question a little bit. And I mean, I don't know. I don't want to sound. I just feel like there's people there that shouldn't be owning large captive animals that are, and it doesn't help. I think like the biggest thing for me is that the fallacy that these organizations help conservation in any fashion. They really don't, unless they have captive breeding programs that like zoos have, which these people do not have the education or the knowledge about. They're not helping the wild population, and it's a lot of times there's like inbreeding, and white tigers don't really exist in the wild. That is breeding tigers together that are incestual. So just keep that in mind when you're thinking about these programs.
Just thought I'd ask that because it just popped in my head. I was like, I'm sure, as a wildlife filmmaker, she has been asked this before.
Oh, yeah. Everything that has to do with tigers, people send to me. My friends think it's quite comical. I think that I studied tigers for a little period of time. And so everything tiger related, I usually get texts or phone calls about.
That's so funny. So don't support those horrible organizations that are portrayed in Tiger King, because they do not help conservation, is the message that I'm getting.
Yeah.
Cool.
Basically. Awesome.
Well, thanks, Emily. Thank you so much for coming on the show, taking the time to speak with us. Do you have social media channels we can check you out on?
I do. M. Earhart and Emily Earhart. I don't have any like hidden names. So on Facebook, Instagram, I don't have, and that's basically all I have now. Sweet. So.
Yeah, our biggest platform is Instagram. So check us out there at the Film Fund on Instagram.
I follow you.
Awesome. There we go. We have our latest contests again. The time of this recording, it's the last day to submit, May 17th, 2022. But if you're listening to this at a later date, contests do happen regularly. So check out our website at thefilmfund.co for the most up-to-date information. Check out our social media. We are at the Film Fund on Instagram, Film Fund Co on Facebook, simply Film Fund on Twitter. And we have a LinkedIn if you want to get your corporate jazz on. It's the second time I said jazz today. I don't know why. But I hate LinkedIn. But we're there if you want to check us out. Check their website for the most updated information. We update it regularly. The email, check out our blog for great filmmaking and producing tips. Sign up for our newsletter to stay up to date on what's happening at the Film Fund. We also have an awesome ebook, The Ultimate Guide to Pre-Production, I think is the title. So check that out on our resources page. Awesome tips on the pre-production process, scheduling, budgeting, casting, location scouting, all that fun stuff. We do have plans for a production and post-production ebook to come out sometime. They're on hiatus, but check out the pre-production one because it's super cool. And thank you again, everyone, for listening. Tune in every month for new episodes of the Film Fund podcast. We generally release them on Fridays, roughly monthly or so. So check us out and listen up. Emily, thank you again. Do you have anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
No, but thank you. I really appreciate everything you do. It's a big, big thing for the community. So, and thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Talk to everyone soon.